Jema. So we are on part one of second series in the essays on the Gita and chapter four. Very intriguingly and fascinatingly, it is titled as The Secret of Secrets. So meaning thereby that there are number of secrets which are hidden from our surface existence. But there is a yet greater secret from which all these secrets derive. So that's why it is secret of secrets. So all these secrets have emerged in the course of human exploration since the age of not just the Vedas, but even before that, because the Vedic Rishis speak of the forefathers. So there have been men who have gone before them, who sought the secret. And this secret was basically to understand one is self, who am I, is there a purpose or not. Second is nature, the world around. And the third is there an ultimate reality or source? So there are different meanings given, different discoveries which have been made by the seers and sages. So Sri Krishna has, up till now, we are almost at the ninth chapter, he has shared those discoveries, described to Arjuna that there is behind your surface existence. Our surface existence is that I am, a kind of ego personality which develops from birth, childhood, social conditioning, various kinds of conditioning. And we say, this is me. So behind this personality, there is something much greater. And this ego personality acts in the operating system of ignorance. What ignorance means? I don't know why I am here. I don't know what is my purpose. I don't know what the world is. I don't know what God is. In fact, I know nothing. But I believe I know everything. That makes it worse. So ignorance is okay, but arrogance is dangerous. So we believe that this world runs around us, must run around us, and God and nature are here only to cater to our wishes, desires, opinions. God must conform to our standards of ideas and opinions. And if it doesn't fit into our standards, our ideas, our opinions, then either he is not God, or else, we must force fit him into our understanding. This is the problem. This is one ego operating system. And even a common sense look at life will show us how absurd it is. See, people often ask wishes from God, and so many, they tie knot to the trees. Now imagine if at any given point of time there are just about 10 people asking for the same object. What does God do? We have story of Draupadi that she asked in her previous life, I want, a man who is strong and mighty, at the same time skillful, handsome, beautiful, learned and wise, and rooted in dharma. So God says, quite a checklist, okay, but it can't be one man. I'm not joking. This is how the story goes. So imagine if 10 people are asking the same object. Yeah. That's it. So when we ask for that, we think that God is meant to obey us. Also, the second problem is that we have certain opinions, ideas based on our human idea. For instance, justice. So we have our idea of justice, that the guilty should be punished. That's human way of thinking. What is guilty, not guilty, is based on the outer actions. So we don't know what preceded it. We don't know what's going to follow. And when the cosmos doesn't present that image to us, we either say there is no God or we say there is no justice. What we do not say is that perhaps I don't understand. So Arjuna is fortunate that he has with him the eternal friend and guide. And he makes that gesture, which is the beginning of all yoga and all knowledge. He turns to Krishna and says, I am bewildered and confused. I don't know what to do. Please guide me, help me. Because according to my understanding, I should not fight this war. My family is going to be, all of them are my family members. And what's the use of fighting a battle if at the end, your family for whom you are fighting is gone. So Arjuna is still in that framework. So he says, so I don't know. One part of me says I should fight because a lot of injustice has been done. Another part says I shouldn't fight. So I think I shouldn't fight. I'll take to sannyas. And Shri Krishna starts by rebuking him and driving away all fear. He starts by cleansing him of all kinds of brainwashing. And what is that brainwashing? Where from so much fear has come into you in this moment of crisis? So fear. Lot of brainwashing in the name of religion, ideology, everything is based on fear. He says, get rid of fear if you want to be clear. Fear is distorting your understanding, distorting your action. Fear of consequences, fear of what may happen. And then he gives him some of the secrets which we see here. One of the secrets is that Arjun, behind your ego-centered personality, what you call as yourself, there is a much greater self awaiting your discovery. This is beautiful, that we need not just believe in it, we can discover it. So important point is, it's not a belief system that Shri Krishna is revealing to Arjuna, but a yoga. So in that sense, the Gita is not a philosophical scripture as much as it is a practical scripture. So it doesn't just say there is a spirit behind, you should believe it. It says, Arjuna, you can discover it. So how can I discover it? So he says, you have to first stop being egocentric. How can I stop being egocentric? Well, you are living only, acting, whatever you are doing only so that your desires can be fulfilled. They may be good desires. I want to do a work and I want to be successful in that work. It may be a good work. You may want to have schemes to change society. And you're trying. And you want it to succeed and you ask God for help. Or even if you don't want to ask for help, you want that it should succeed because you believe it's a good work. So he says, first learn to do your work. He's not saying don't do this work. Do your works to the best of your ability. But you must know that result does not belong to you. Basic common sense actually. We really don't know who determines the results to start with or what determines the result. Anybody who has crossed 30 years of age or 25 knows that it's not enough that I want it and I have done it with best of intentions. Well, fine, we are not doubting your intention, yet the result is not what you expected. So he says, first get rid of that knot of fruit. So if you get rid of the knot of fruit, then what happens? Then you do your work with clarity. Why? Because wanting fruits distorts the vision. Say in a company, a person is working. So he wants things to happen in a certain way. He starts pleasing the man who is on top. So slowly what is happening is that his ambition, falsehood, they are all taking over. He starts putting a mask, a facade, say in a yoga center or in a place of yoga, he starts putting up a dress, even unconsciously sometimes, so that he looks like a yogi, he gets more respect. So all this starts, which is a game of falsehood. So he says very clearly that if you follow that approach, you will be bound head and neck. So first get rid of that. Okay? Renounce the fruits. What next? He says, are you the doer? I may say, I am the doer, I have renounced the fruit. Are you the doer? This also common sense. It doesn't require to read a scripture except the scripture of life. Whatever we do, whether it be through our intelligence, emotions, will, impulsion, physical organs, instruments, all that is involved, prana, the life energy. Is it something that I have made out of something? It has been given to me. Who has given to me? Now comes nature. Nature has given you all this. What are we doing? We are making a choice how we will use it. That's all. But we are not the doer. So the second lesson is that I am not the doer. So when we get rid of these two things, the knot of action, that's how it is called, that the result and the sense of doer, then we begin to discover a deep calm, peace of the spirit within us. And it's very easy to discover it actually if we take sincere effort. That from today onwards, I will do what I should do. So now the question is, if you are not the doer and not the result, how are you going to decide what I should do? Because you are not impelled by desire anymore. So desire is the mover, that's how we believe. And when you know you are not the doer, an average person will say, okay, I'll sit quietly, let things happen. Now comes the third element, the secret that is revealed. No, there is a divine impulsion in creation. That divine impulsion in everything is called as swabhava. Swabhava is the divine impulsion in everything through which karma is released. This is something very interesting. It's not I am the doer of karma. If nature is the doer, then how come I become the doer of karma? Karma is entirely the divine energy which has gone into release. So what am I doing? Through making choices, instead of obeying the impulsion of the divine swabhava and swadharma, my role is of distorting that clear action which can emerge. So that's why Sri Krishna says very clearly, swadharmo nidhanam shreya paradharmo bhayavaha. Better to die following your own law of being than to follow an alien dharma. So this is how the Gita develops. So this is the third secret, swabhava. So the moment he speaks of swabhava, then the fourth secret is revealed. Oh, so divine is not just a silent witness watching things. He's also pushing us. So there is something called as divine will, something called as divine wisdom, or a divine nature. So from there comes this fourth secret, that there is a double nature. There is the ignorant nature in which we live, and there is the divine nature. And the whole journey of man, this comes the fifth secret, is to arise from this ignorant, troubled, vexed, ego-bound, desire-driven nature to a larger, vaster, freer, calmer, wiser, powerful, diviner existence. This is the whole journey. So that means moksha is not about liberation out of this world into some heavenly state. It's not a post-mortem salvation, but here, while in upon earth, we can switch our operating system from the ego and desire to the divine and his nature. This is the whole yoga that is being given. Now comes the final secret of secrets. All these secret is there. So Arjuna, I mean everybody, but who is all this behind this? There is a divine nature, there is human nature, there is swabhava, there is the spirit's calm. All this is there. Who is the one who is behind all this? Then Sri Krishna is preparing Arjuna for the grand revelation. He says, I, the eternal doer, I, the eternal friend. How Shubhendu says, the master of man and his infinite lover. He is close to our hearts, had we vision to see. But then we are bound. We are lost in the pride and the pomp of our passions. We are bound by our thoughts, where we hold ourselves free, that I am a free thinker. There is nothing like free thinker. Because it's just an illusion. But okay, it's that all that he will describe. So then Sri Krishna reveals, who is he? Now here we have to understand, it's not Krishna of this person, that person, or a religion or a sect or anything. Each one has built a little Krishna according to his own vision. And before we read, we have to remind ourselves, because this happens unconsciously. See, in Alipur jail, we have heard about Sri Krishna Vasudev. Vasudev. Shubhendu used the word Vasudev. So wherever you will see, even in movies, there have been documentaries made on Sri Aurobindo and Krishna. Then they describe the Vasudev. They will show Sri Krishna holding a flute and Sri Krishna. But who is Sri Krishna? Sri Aurobindo writes in one of his poems that vain cried time and space. And then he describes, he says, red lips that kiss and blow the flute. But how he describes, all he loves, all he moves, all are his, all is he. This is the divine whom Sri Krishna is preparing him to reveal. And he will eventually show the great vision in chapter 11. But this is the revelation. And he's here, Sri Aurobindo is just preparing us that look here, all these secrets have been revealed, but there is a greater secret. And from this secret of secret sprouts the seed of bhakti, which is the crown and the key of everything. Sri Krishna and Sri Aurobindo, both of them, speak about bhakti as the crowning movement. You see, I mean, we can erect an impersonal God if we want. Nothing wrong with that. Impersonal Brahman is immutable, is right behind this. True. But there is something beyond the immutable, and that is the Purushottama. But it's not just Purushottama seated above. His Purushottama seated in the heart of every creature. That's the vision of Vasudev. He tells, when Sri Aurobindo is in jail, that everybody will end up doing my will. Even those who oppose me are doing my will. Imagine. He says, you don't worry. What a great calm and peace just this utterance can bring to man. Even those who are opposing me are doing my will. See, in Sanatana Dharma, that speech in Uttarpada. So we have the secret of secrets on page 301. So we have a few lines below. The teacher therefore takes care first to draw attention to the decisive character of what he is about to say, so that the mind of Arjuna may be awakened and attentive. See, should be those lines. If you read it, it's casual. Okay, yes, yes, decisive character. But why it is decisive? Decisive means the supreme authority. If he says, I can take it as decisive. So why it is decisive? For he is going to open his mind to the knowledge and sight of the integral divinity and lead up to the vision of the 11th book, by which the warrior of Kurukshetra becomes conscious of the author and upholder of his being and action and mission, the Godhead in man and the world, whom nothing in man and the world limits or binds. Imagine, how many of us can really say, it's so beautiful and powerful, if somebody says, but how do you say that transformation is going to be? And supposing we say, because Sri Aurobindo says so. Look at it. What a, who is saying? Okay, if I am saying, you can disregard. Or if X, Y, Z is saying, writing in a book, that's okay. But who is Sri Aurobindo? Who is saying so? Who is the mother who is saying, assuring us? And at places he has said, Sri Aurobindo has said so, that the transformation is going to be. Never for an instant doubt about it. So that is the kind of state towards which Arjuna is being taken. That who is the one whom you are standing? You think he is just the charioteer? You think he is a friend? Yes. But who is he? Arjuna is to become aware of himself as existing only in God and as acting only by the power within him. Now he has to forget he is Dronacharya's Sishya, he is Pandu Putra, Kunti Putra, he is brother, he is this, that. He has to understand his whole existence is by Krishna, for Krishna, in Krishna. That's the secret of secrets towards which he is being led. His workings only an instrumentality of the divine action. His egoistic consciousness only a veil. And to his ignorance, misrepresentation of the real being within him, which is an immortal spark and portion of the Supreme Godhead. What a wonderful power-packed passage it is, that, you know, I am the doer. This, so says, forget it. This, I often remember these lines from Dujendra Lal Roy. Tomar kormo tumi koroma loke bole kori ami. Your act, deeds you are doing, people think I am doing. She is the doer. And you know, and It brings such a liberation, such a liberation. You are not carrying burden or responsibility on your head. How did I do? What was it like? You have to just remain open. That's what is important. Not let the ego intervene. Now, very interesting, he says, this vision is to remove whatever doubt may still remain within his mind. That's why he's taking it up. Till now, there is intellectual argument going on. Now, he's going to say, look here, I'm going to tell you who I am talking to you. You have freedom of choice. That he says even in the end. You have freedom of choice. Whatever you want to do, you can listen, you don't listen. But I must tell you, who am I? It is to make him strong for the action from which he has shrunk, but to which he is irrevocably commanded and can no more recoil from it. That's what Shivinda says in Uttarpada Bhashan. Men are compelled to do his will. We may not understand. We'll say, hey, what kind of will is this? So that also he'll tell us. For to recoil would be the negation and denial of the divine will and sanction within him, already expressed in his individual consciousness, but soon to assume appearance of the greater cosmic action. For now the world being appears to him as the body of God, ensouled by the eternal time spirit, and with its majestic and dreadful voice, missions him to the crash of the battle. Now, denial by Arjuna is to deny the divine will. I won't fight. It's not good. Gandhiji has strictly forbidden. He has said, keep the lathi, but don't lift it. What would Sri Krishna say? But I, Krishna, the Godhead within man, I say so. Can we refuse that? We have story of, Prithvendra brother, Togada. When the ashram was attacked, he took the lathi and fought. I met him actually. Now he's no more. And he fought valiantly till finally a stone struck and he dropped. He was unconscious. He recovered completely. So he was telling me, I don't know what came over me. And the mother says it was Durga's impulsion and he responded of all the people. And he saw the hooligans coming and he picked up his little lathi and fought them left and right and center, chased them away. And she says he was moved by Durga and she was so glad that he understood the need of the moment and responded. You need just one person to do that. You don't need too many people. Just one person to respond to the call of the divine. And he was mentioning that how, you know, mother has spoken very highly of him in that process. And if we do that, then this leads to, he is called by it to the liberation of his spirit, to the fulfillment of his action in the cosmic mystery. And the two, liberation and action, are to be one movement. So it's not like I'll get liberated when I sit in meditation. But when I act, well, I am bound. But what to do? I have to act according to whatever duty has been given to me. No. Even the action should be impelled by the divine, then that action liberates. So this is the beauty of the Gita, that through action you arrive at liberation. But you have to feel that sabhava, the impulsion of the divine. That's the whole secret. But for that we have to first reclaim the spirit. So all that step by step. Okay. A few lines below on the next passage. What has gone before showed him that he is not bound fatally to the knot of the ignorance and egoistic action in which he had hitherto remained. So what is this knot of action which we keep hearing from all kinds of saints and sages? That, well, if you act, action in the world will bind you. Not so, says the Lord of the Gita. Not so, says the Isha Upanishad. Not so, says Sri Aurobindo. Action binds when it is done under ego and stress of desire. Even you do God's service under the stress of ego and desire, it will bind you. But if you are doing all the things in the world and you are doing in that state that he is the doer, whatever be the result, they belong to him. Mine is only the right to act in whatever way I am impelled from within. You are a free person. You don't have to do anything extraordinary. See, what a great teaching. So he is giving us the sutra. So a few lines below it is, he may act with desire, with passion, and ego driven by the qualities of the lower nature, subject to the balance of virtue and sin, joy and sorrow, preoccupied with the fruits and consequences of his works. People spend so much time, waste time. If I do this, what will be the consequence? If I do that, what will be the repercussions? What a waste of time and energy. Okay, you should plan. Planning organization is part of the action itself. But what may happen? Whether it will succeed, not succeed? Leave it to the all-seeing power. So, but Arjun can either act this way, fruits and consequences, preoccupied with the fruits and consequences of his works, success and defeat, good result and evil result, bound on the world machine, caught up in a great tangle of action and inaction and perverse action, karma, karma and vikarma, which perplex the heart and mind and soul of man with their changing and contrary mass in appearances. But he is not utterly tied down to the works of the ignorance. He may do it, if he will, the works of knowledge. He may act here as the higher thinker, the knower, the yogin, the seeker of freedom, first and afterwards the liberated spirit. And it can happen in every field. I've met some, you know, cricketers who later played for the national level, and he used to get very anxious. So he said, for whom are you playing? He says, you know, I want this selection, that, this, that, 100 things are going on. So he said, play for the joy. It's your worship to the divine, to God. That's it. You're not playing for effect. You're not playing to show off. You're not playing to amass centuries. And some of the greatest cricketers have played like that. The delight of works. And not only cricket, pianist, piano. Some of the greatest ones have not done it because the audience, because of fame, because of money, because of name. None of this. They played because it's God's impulsion in them. There's a beautiful story of Pandit Jasraj, the famous vocalist, one of my favorites, classical music. So when people were going in the temple, he was called to sing bhajans of Krishna, some very beautiful bhajans. And now there was a crowd going in, and he was thinking, should I go inside or I don't go? He was not feeling inclined. Then Shri Krishna appeared before him. He says, let others go inside. Your song is my worship. What songs he has sung. And it can be anything. It can be cooking. Even Sri Aurobindo was asked, is there a supramental way of cooking? He says, everything you can do in that higher consciousness. It becomes prasad. That's the whole in Jagannath temple. It's prasad. It's cooked only for the Lord. But millions of people come and thousands of people come and eat it. So there's the whole idea behind that you are not doing now people's praise. Who is saying, acha, where is the chef? How well he has cooked? None of this. So everything can become that. Now he is revealing the secret. So if he does with this second state, then it is the path of escape from his sorrow and bewilderment, the way out of the human riddle. Mother gave a very simple sutra. We are not here to please others. We are not here to please ourselves. We are here to please the divine. Finished. What others will think, maybe think, well, they'll think he's a crackpot, impractical fellow. It's okay. But this is the smartest thing to do, to be connected with the divine. Because then you are with the highest. What one can be afraid of when all the time you are in the company of the divine. So he reveals these secrets one by one. There is a spirit within us, calm, superior to works, equal, not bound in this external tangle, surveying it as its supporter, source, imminent witness, but not involved in it. In real life, one example I know of, many examples, one of them is R.K. Talwar. He was chief of the Reserve Bank of India at one point of time. He was a devotee of the mother. And he was one man who even then prime minister, he said no. So he was during emergency period, and he was asked to put up his papers. otherwise he would be sacked. He said, I have no issues. He put up his papers, gave it, handed over. So in his farewell, people were telling him that you should have done this, and you know, this is very bad. We are feeling so sad that you have to leave this way. He said, but why sad? Here I have served the mother, now I am going directly to serve her. He came in Pondicherry ashram and he lived here, and his service was very interesting. He said, see, if I join the ashram, you'll send me to dining room. I have been trained by the mother for money, handing money. I'll get money and everything. He used to offer it for mother's work. He said, that's my joy. Look at, you know, there have been people like that, and warriors like that, and knowers of the Brahman who have been like that, who don't do it for effect or for anything. So this is the first thing. Then the eternal spirit itself is free from these things. Okay, few lines below we'll go. He says, man is not now conscious of this self. So this is the first thing that we have to become conscious of, the eternal spirit within. And what is the obstacle? People often say, oh, you know, my family is so troubling me always. Always there will be a family to trouble you as long as you want to be troubled. Or, you know, in my department, there is a problem. We hear this. This department person is like this. That department person is like, Ari, why have you come to realize the divine? Who can trouble you? So Sri Aurobindo says, ego is the obstacle. Ego is the obstacle. The linchpin of the wheel of delusion. Practically it means whenever you have to take a decision, you say your bit in your field, you do your bit. What others will do, not do. Mother said at one point, mind your own business. That's difficult enough. We get identified with the collective ego, with the institution, all this. Who knows? Collectivities, civilizations, institutions rise and fall like empires. But that divine, eternal, he always is. So first thing is to be beyond all these trappings of the ego. So ego is the obstacle. The loss of the ego in the soul self, the first condition of freedom. To become spirit, no longer merely a mind and ego, is the opening word of this message of liberation. So we have to first get the spirit, the right spirit, not the spirit that one drinks. In ashram, there used to be a notice in the beginning. Manivan was telling me that she came here as a 15-year-old girl, and she goes to the ashram, there is a notice, spirit distribution. So, my God, it's so good. What an ashram. Spirit is given to you like this. She realized. But it is so true. If we are open, she gives the spirit like this. It's true. That's what I was telling her. But even whatever you may say, it is true. Mother can give the spirit like this. We are not ready to receive. We want our way, my way, no other way. So all this. So Arjuna has been therefore called upon first to give up all desire of the fruit of works and become simply the desireless, impartial doer of whatever has to be done. So you are doing this work here. Tomorrow you are shifted there. Tomorrow there is third day, there is no work. In all conditions, you are equal. And the second is, he says something very interesting. Leaving the fruit to whatever power may be the master of the cosmic workings. Now you see, very powerful he says. For he very evidently is not the master. It is not for the satisfaction of his personal ego that nature was set upon her ways. Imagine, 15 billion years evolution is taking place. Why? To satisfy my ego. How absurd it looks. Nature was not set on her ways to satisfy my ego, personal ego. Not for the fulfillment of his desires and preferences that the universal life is living. See, there is a touch of irony in all this. not for the justification of his intellectual opinions, judgments and standards, that the universal mind is working. This is all, this one half a sentence is a reply. Auroville is burning, Auroville is sinking, Auroville, okay, in your opinion, maybe in your mind, maybe. Divine doesn't care to satisfy your opinions. It is a divine project. How do you understand? That's why one of the first things when people come to the ashram, wise counsel is, don't try to understand with your little mind. You won't. It's not a human creation anyways. Even human creations you can't understand. Mind is working, nor is it to that petty tribunal that it has to refer its cosmic aims or its terrestrial methods and purposes. Petty tribunal of the human mind which will pass judgment. Whether this was right done by God or wrong done by God. No. You see what happened in Pandava's time. All this we can refer to. What a long preparations they had to undergo. What happened to Rama that time? If we had to apply our egoistic, ignorant standard, we would say people call him God. What kind? God is not with him. His own dad has abandoned him. His own mother has ditched him. That's how people would have said. Today Rama is immortalized in the mind of man. So this is the way they have shown. So we have to be detached from all this. And so all this he is being prepared for this great revelation. So what is that revelation? On page 306. The revelation is, I who am within thee. Now you see, he has made it clear. It's not Shri Krishna, the personality of the moment. But Shri Krishna, eternal Godhead, and all of us can lay claim to that. I, who am within thee, he was saying, that is Shri Krishna. I, who am here in this human body, I, for whom all exists, acts, strives, am at once the secret of the self-existent spirit and of the cosmic action. So now he's telling us the secret of the secrets. Nature, cosmic action, immutable spirit, swabhava, soul, ego, dualities, desires, all this. Now he's saying, who is the one hidden behind all this? What is that line? It is he in the sun who is ageless and deathless, and into the midnight his shadow is thrown. When darkness was dense and covered with darkness, he was seated within it, immense and alone. This I is the greater I, of whom the largest human personality is only a partial and fragmentary manifestation. Nature itself only an inferior working, master of the soul, master of all the works of the cosmos. I am the one light, the sole power, the only being. This Godhead within thee is the teacher, the sun, the lifter of the clear blaze of knowledge in which thou becomest aware of the difference between thy immutable self and thy mutable nature. But look beyond the light itself to its source. Now you see, it closes with, I, the Godhead, am the highest truth of self and spirit. So 1926, 24th November, when Sri Aurobindo, we can't say started the ashram, but the ashram started, well, birth. So what is the book that Sri Aurobindo comes out soon after that? Everything is there. Arya, he could have told them, okay, you read these books and do this meditation. No. The first book that comes out is The Mother. And along with that, there is a note of Sri Aurobindo which he writes on behalf of the mother. I am the Shakti of Sri Aurobindo. Yes. Yes. So you see, one is to God of wealth and the other is the mother. So see, that's when people come to the ashram, oh mother, we have to open to mother. Who is mother? This is the mother. First be clear. That's what Gita, Sri Krishna is revealing. Who am I? Because all the rest comes from that. If she is only the mother of a, you know, convent school or mother of some sect or mother of an ashram or mother of a, you know, practice, then it's okay. It's one way to look at it. Or a guru of a particular movement, no. She is the consciousness force of the Supreme. And, you know, when you read that chapter 6, it's a revelation. So this is the secret of secrets, Sri Aurobindo gives, so that we know whom are we connecting with. And the mother's revelation in that book by Mona Da, Supreme, is so significant. So, in the next passage, so from this secret, which is at once the secret of the individual and the universe and nature and everything else, so what is to be done? Therefore, has he to do works as a sacrifice. Sacrifice means giving to this Godhead. Whatever I may be doing outwardly, it may look for whomever, but this work is only at the feet of the mother, to the mother, for the mother. This is from here. This opens up the door of bhakti. So bhakti is not jumping, dancing and, you know, doing those tal majira kirtan. Bhakti is giving yourself to the divine. Page 307. This is the double condition of the divine birth in man, of its release from the mortality of the ego and the body into the spiritual and eternal. What are the double conditions? Knowledge first of one's timeless, immutable self. So first is that there is a spirit behind. We have already spoken about it. Through desireless action, by knowing you are not the doer, you can reclaim that spirit's calm and mastery and freedom. But knowledge too of that which lives behind the riddle of cosmos, the Godhead in all existences and their workings. Here is the place of bhakti in the scheme of the yoga of an integral self-liberation. See, this is the problem people don't... There was a book, I speak openly because, you know, that's how Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now. So he came and gave a lecture also. People went, attended, their business problem. But somebody asked him about, you know, Sri Aurobindo, and he says, but why you have to hold it? Typical, it's a Buddhist way of Zen Buddhism, not even Buddha. He says, master has pointed you the way, you discard the master and go the way. I said, yes, it may apply there, but it doesn't apply here. In the path of knowledge, it applies like that. That's what Vedanta is. Jnana Yoga is, but this is integral yoga, Samagram Mam. If I were only a mind seeking knowledge, it's fine. But I am also a heart throbbing for love. So I am also a will striving for action in the world. And I am also a body which has to become a tool in the hands of someone. So that's where that error. And there are people who write because there is a book called Transformation of Earth and all this. I say openly because, see, these are misconceptions that, oh, the power of now. Therefore, because one doesn't want to surrender, one doesn't want to accept that there is a greater reality, much greater, from which all this derives. And we can become part and parcel of that reality. So that's how Sri Aurobindo describes that when you worship and bow to the divine, divine lifts you up and puts you to his heart. So this is where, here is the place of bhakti in the scheme of the yoga of an integral self-liberation. Look at it. And this applies entirely to this yoga. Also, all the things apply to this yoga except that the transformation of nature, complete changeover from human nature to the divine nature, which is hinted in the Gita, is not there, and the instruments. And here it is the mother. Here is the place of bhakti in the scheme of yoga. It is an adoration and aspiration towards that which is greater than imperishable self or changing nature. So changing nature is mutable, Sharbhava, and unchanging is immutable or Akshara Brahma. And beyond that is the Purushottama. For us, it is the Parameshwari, a divine mother. It is an adoration and aspiration. All knowledge then becomes an adoration and aspiration. But all works to become an adoration and aspiration. Works of nature and freedom of soul are unified in this adoration and become one self-uplifting to the one Godhead. the final release, a passing away from the lower nature to the source of the higher spiritual becoming, is not an extinction of the soul. So important for especially the Indian mind, impressed with this idea of moksha, moksha, moksha. It is not extinction of the soul. It is the extinction of the ego in that greater self. See the difference? Therefore, the logic and the meaning of purpose of birth. So this what you know is generally, so it is not an extinction of the soul. Only its form of ego becomes extinct. But a departure of our whole self of knowledge, will and love. Our self of knowledge, will and love is the three mind, heart and will operating system. They will depart. Where they will depart? To dwell no longer in his universal but in his supra-cosmic reality, a fulfillment, not an annulment. So the mind becomes the mind of God, if you want to put it like that. With streamings of knowledge, spontaneously revealing whatever needs to be revealed. Practical omniscience. Our limited human will, united with the divine will, fulfilling itself as the divine wills. So this is practical omnipotence. And the heart, our limited love, joining the divine love with all its sweetness and joy and delight radiating upon all the earth. This is the important thing that, and then of course he speaks about the soul bound and released. So what is this mechanical nature? He says passingly, page 308, that mechanical nature is only a lower truth. It is the formula of an inferior phenomenal action. There is a higher, which is the spiritual, and that is the nature of our spiritual personality, our true person. So there is a true super nature, and we can take it like that. And on the mobile, I felt like a revelation. It's so fascinating. You select, and then you cut. And after that, you are doing some work. And then after some time, you paste somewhere else. So where was this, what you cut there? If I say it was saved on my finger did the marvel, people say, you are such a stupid, dumb person. No, it was in the mobile. Oh, really? Where is it? In some supra-cosmic, in some cosmic space, if you want to put it materially. So you see, things come from there and they belong there. Now here he is taking us one step further. And that is the self of self. The soul of self. So that is where we are being taken. Okay. And so we spoke about the Sabhava. All this we have been covering. So page 309. This truth, the truth of the Godhead in man, the truth of the Godhead behind cosmos, the truth of the Godhead who not only governs and rules nature, but ultimately is the sole doer. If you look at it, nature is only its executive power. And he pushes nature, and nature then pushes individuals who think, I am the doer, I am the achiever. So... this truth is the secret of being, which the Gita is now going to apply in its amplitude of result for our inner life and our outer works. What it is going to say is the most secret thing of all. And this is so true. Even in the Upanishads, you don't find it. All the Gurujis, Swamijis, they don't reveal this secret. It's somehow not accessible. Some have, but even they, when they talk about Krishna, some follower, they ultimately, this world, you have to leave it, this is still a Maya and or a Leela and you have to go back. No, they don't have this secret. That's why it's secret of secrets. That it is he who is doing these works, and it is so logical then if divine is engaged with the world, how can I run away and claim that I love him? I often give this example. You say that you love someone and the person is busy outside cleaning the road. And you say, I am resting, enjoying in my comfort. And then you say, you know, I love that person. But that person is cleaning outside. Yes, I know, but I love that person, but I am enjoying my air-conditioned room. What kind of love would that be? If you really love, you would say, come, I'll go there. And, oh Lord, can I I cannot maybe sweep with your giant broom, but give me a small little something to do. So works as a sacrifice to the eternal. So that gives a meaning and purpose of our existence. It's indeed secret of secrets. The Gita reveals it, Sri Aurobindo reveals it. Otherwise, people talk, they talk about Krishna, they talk about Gita, ultimately they turn towards, away from the world. It is the knowledge of the whole Godhead, Samagram Mam, which the master of his being has promised to Arjuna. That essential knowledge, attended with the complete knowledge of it in all its principles, which will leave nothing yet to be known. This is the original idea of Brahma, knowing which all else can be known. That's the story of Sanat Kumar and Narad, that knowing that all can be known. So, this is the wisdom of all wisdoms, the secret of all secrets, the king knowledge, the king's secret. It is a pure and supreme light which one can verify by direct spiritual experience. So one starts with faith, then ends up through the yoga with experience. And see in oneself as the truth. It is the right and just knowledge, the very law of being. But what is required? In the end it comes. There is a very interesting, you know, small little story. And then we'll read this last passage. That, you know, we think we are the doer. So there is a story in the Mahabharata. The story is when Krishna tells Arjun, you people are just fretting and fuming. Oh, they did this to me. I'll go. I'll fight. Said, first get strength. Worship the mother of strength. So he sends Arjun to pray to Lord Shiva for the Pashupatastra. So Arjun does and goes and does tapasya. And Shiva comes conjured as a, you know, there's a long story, but to cut it short. So Shiva comes and there is a boar which is killed. Boar is an asura who tries to attack, but Arjun is too swift and he takes the bow and arrow and shoots him. But meanwhile, there is another arrow which is stuck at the same time. This is by Shiva, who has conjured himself as a local, one of those tribes. And Arjun says, I am the one who has done it. But Shiva says, Sivak, now he is concealed. He says, I am the one who has done it. He says, you believe that you are swifter than Arjun? And he says, well, this is a fact. He says, prove it. They both start fighting. So first time Arjun notices that, well, he is so easily finishing me of all my arrows and everything. He cannot be just any ordinary mortal or even a god, because he has defeated even Indra. So then Shiva suddenly appears. He says, yes, you're right. I am not just an ordinary tribesman, but somebody else. I am Shiva. Then he says, oh, I am so sorry. How could I even oppose the Godhead whom I was worshipping and I couldn't recognize you? So I must die. This is the only way I can atone for my sin. So he is preparing a pyre for himself. He says, nothing can stop me, because this opposing the God whom I love and worship, I am doing this, so nobody stops him. Krishna comes. He says, yes, I agree. What you have done is something which you shouldn't have done. But now that you have done it, I'll give you an option. You can die this way or you can die another way. He says, another way? Is there another form of death? He says, yes. And then he says, praise yourself. Because the Shastras say, if you praise yourself, it is as good as death. Why? I am the doer. I have done this. I have written a book. I am the one. So, what is happening? This I, the ego, is death. To live in the ego is to live in death. So Arjun says, what are you asking me to do? He says, yes, if you, either the pyre or this. But I would advise that you do this, because you have to become instrument of the divine action. So poor fellow has to say, I am Arjuna, I am thus mighty. There is nobody in the universe like me. And you know, then Shiva has a laugh and then he says, okay, enough of your death. And he gives him the Pashupati Astra. So see, this, there are so many ways it is taught in the scriptures that, you know, get rid of the ego. But finally, but faith is necessary. The last two lines on page 309, last three lines. If faith is absent, if one trusts to the critical intelligence which goes by outward facts and jealously questions the revelatory knowledge, because that does not square with the divisions and imperfections of the apparent nature and seems to exceed it and states something which carries us beyond the first practical facts of our present existence, its grief, its pain, evil, defect, undivine, error and stumbling, ashubham, then there is no possibility of living out that greater knowledge. See, the punishment is embedded in it. If you are criticizing the divine with your critical mind and you think that, you know, my thinking is correct, my judgments are correct, you are as good as dead. You have lost that opportunity given to you of rising to a greater life. This is what Sri Krishna is telling us. He is not saying don't do it. He says you can do it. But basically you are as good as dead. And you are paving so many more stones in the path of your progress. And frankly, you might as well do it anywhere else, because then yoga faith begins with faith. Faith in the higher knowledge, faith in the truth of the divine, faith in the path, faith in the goal, then only you can proceed. Actually, anything for that matter. Even a scientific discovery starts with faith that there is a truth that I can discover through my intelligence. So, he says, this soul that fails to get faith in the higher truth and law must return into the path of ordinary mortal living, subject to death and error and evil. It cannot grow into the Godhead which it denies. He is not taking away the freedom to deny. He says, but that means you return into the world of ignorance, ordinary life, evil, darkness. Fine, your choice. Then people cry, why has God done this to me? So, for this is a truth which has to be lived, and lived in the soul's growing light, not argued out in the mind's darkness. So he is not saying that you have to take it as a belief. He says this is a truth. Have faith and grow in the light. As you develop in the soul, you will discover, yes, this is so true. That's the only way to verify it. It's not to be verified. It cannot be verified by debates and discussions, because the mind does not have that acumen, the apparatus or the capacity. But he is not saying you cannot discover it. You can discover it, but by walking the path with the light of faith to start with. One has to grow into it. One has to become it. That is the only way to verify it. Couple of lines below. The release from the evil and the defect of the lower nature, ashubham, can only come by accepting a higher knowledge in which all this apparent evil, mark the words, apparent evil, because evil is serving some purpose in the cosmic scheme. Maybe to awaken us. It's sharply, you sleeping fellows, wake up with your leonine force, God's energy within you. So it comes. But to grow thus into the freedom of the divine nature, one must accept and believe in the Godhead secret within our present limited nature. If we don't start with that, he's saying categorically it cannot be done. As simple as that. I was reading one day the trust deed of the ashram, that long back when. That do we really require faith to be here or not? The first sentence, one of the first sentences, the mother says, this place is for those who have faith in the teachings of Sri Aurobindo and want to practice the yoga. It's there in the trust deed that you have to have faith and the practice. Otherwise, the world is there. You can be anywhere, no problem. The very first, that faith is so important. The Gita will anyways elaborate on faith in much greater detail, so we'll wait for that moment. The release from the evil and the labor, ashubham. All this apparent evil becomes convinced of ultimate unreality is shown to be a creation of a darkness. But to grow into thus into the freedom of the divine nature, one must accept and believe in the Godhead secret within a present limited nature. So how does this apparent evil This is ultimately unreal. So it's very simple. So some event takes place, any event. Say somebody dies at a young age because of something. So we say that, you know, this is so sad. And supposing one dies of a, you know, accident, so we say it's so sad. Now, what is the difference? Departure from his body is a fact. Your reactions are ignorance. So that's how it twists our mind, darkness. You should say, I don't know what is happening, impartially. That's why agnosticism is the highest the mind can go. I don't know, maybe he's in a very happy state. Who knows? He's traveling into the beyond in a still greater journey. I'm saying, even if you don't believe in any scripture, this is just again common sense. At least that's how I had arrived at this conclusion, just by sheer reason. That look here, we don't know what has happened after that. Let's leave all the scriptures aside. But the moment I say it is bad, that means I have biased, conditioned. It's not knowledge, it's my preconceived notion. So this apparent egoistic thing, this is the source of evil. It's apparent evil. And as darkness goes, then you begin to see that Abhimanyu dying at 17 immortalizes himself in the history of mankind. This is the vision. So the last sentence, the Godhead works out the divine birth in us progressively. We should have faith. Who will achieve this? The divine will achieve this in us. But we have to present ourselves in the hands of the divine. Simply, infallibly, by taking up our being into his and by filling it with his own knowledge and power, Jnana Deepe Bhaswata, he lays hands on our obscure, ignorant nature and transforms it into his own light and wideness. How will we rise? Faith, surrender, aspiration, detachment, spiritual detachment from this outer turbulent field. Then how will our nature change into divine nature? That's his lookout. That's not your job description. How does he do it? Simply fills us. We have to go there as pots. Empty pot, broken pot, good pot, bad pot is not our problem. Place it in his hands. There is a story about somebody taking a flower to mother. It had already become, it was fading. So this lady on her birthday, she thought, oh my God, I'm taking a faded flower. She's thinking, then she said, it's okay. She goes there and goes to the mother and says, mother, this is like my being. This is the only thing I could get. So the mother said nothing. She just took smilingly, she was talking and gently caressing the flower, and the flower bloomed. This is how we have to present ourselves. Then how does he change us? Progressively, simply, infallibly. He knows his steps. He will do it. That's his job description. And what with, and now comes the master word, what with entire faith and without egoism we believe in. Egoism means I have faith, but you must fulfill my idea of things. If things don't work out, I had faith in you, but my opponent has won. So that's not faith. That's bargain. So he says, without egoism, what with entire faith and without egoism, we believe in and impelled by him will to be, the God within will surely accomplish. That idea, faith, will, that's all that is required. And one has to ardently continue. Whatever happens, even the world crashes, one is crying tears of blood. One is going to pieces through the shredder. Ma. That's it. Then the change comes. There is a price to be paid. No external money can compensate for that price. The price is the ego. That's what the Godhead demands. First, Kali will take away the ego, then Krishna will fill it with all his sweetness and delight. This is the way. So she says, he says, but the egoistic mind and life we now and apparently are must first surrender itself for transmutation into the hands of that inmost secret divinity within us. Jai Ma.